this is Circe Olson Westner, the Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with Roberta Chavez, who is the mother to an Army veteran, and I'm sitting outside of her grandparents' house, who are a World War II family, and her aunt Dorothy is here, and also her son Mark Rose. So we're just going to have a conversation about what it's like to be a military mom. So Roberta, you were telling me that your son Mark joined the Army in 2001. So how did you feel when you heard he was joining the Army?
I was very proud of him and expected him to go on to college and, you know, or stay in the Army and make a career of it.
And so he was just out of high school? Had he graduated yet?
No, it was before he graduated, that early entry program. And he decided that's what he wanted to do with his life. And I supported that.
Okay. Did you have friends that joined too, Mark?
Yes, I actually joined with a friend of mine that I graduated high school with.
Is that what they call the buddy system?
The buddy system.
So you shipped out to basic training. Where was that?
Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Ah, my father went to basic training there back in the 40s.
Lost in the Woods.
Yeah, Fort Lost in the Woods. So he was far away because you were living by Alamogordo.
Yes, I was living at that time in Tularosa. New Mexico.
So this was probably August, September?
August.
So you shipped your child off, and then 9/11 happened. So, Mark, you're in basic training, and 9/11 happened. What did they tell you? What did you feel?
Well, the day 9/11 happened, we were going out to the shooting range for training. And so nobody knew, you know, that it right away when it happened. We went out to the shooting range and we did our, you know, weapons training. We came back, it was like mid-afternoon, and we turned in our weapons to the arms room, and then they had us all huddled up in the field outside the arms room. Mm-hmm. And then that's when they told us. And I remember thinking, you know, wow, I didn't know what to think. I was just shocked, and I kind of felt like war was imminent because of that, you know. But the drill sergeants, the cadre, they all told us that, oh, you guys aren't going to war right now, you know, you guys are in training, you know, if they start picking us to go, then you guys should worry. And so I just, you know, I felt angry about it, you know, that we got attacked. But I was also kind of, I guess the only word that comes to mind is kind of scared too.
Yeah. I remember I was driving to work. We lived on Kirtland, and I was driving off base, and the radio came on, and they were playing the story, and I kept thinking, this is like that radio show War of the Worlds. This is not really happening. But the military wife part of me said, I've got to get back to base. I've got to get the kids out of school and back to base because they're going to lock down the base. So I literally, you know, zipped into work. They said, we're closing everything down. And I went and got the kids out of school, and we did bunker down because they shut the base. And I remember telling my kids, this is the beginning of World War III. I have no idea why I would think that. They were, I don't know, 10th grade and 8th grade. So now you, Mom, Roberta, you're sitting probably watching it on TV.
Well, I was at home, and I had his younger sister and brother. Mm-hmm. And I was taking them, getting them ready for school. And the phone rang, and my sister, who's married to a Navy officer, and she's calling me from Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And she's ahead of us, so it was early in the morning. And I answered the phone. She told me, turn your TV on now, because I didn't know what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I turned it on and I saw, I got very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my son would end up going. I just dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was more hurt mm-hmm. that we lost all those people mm-hmm. for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I worried about my son, Mark, and my other two kids, how to explain that their brother might have to go.
Right. So...
So it's kind of like you want to be strong for part of your family, mm. and you have to find moments mm. to be weak for yourself and mourn. And but I wanted to stay strong for Mark, so I try to keep like a positive outlook when I talk to him.
Right, and I think a lot of military moms and dads do that. We have to stay
positive.
We have to stay positive and put together because we can't put our fear on them. They've got other work to
yes.
do.
Yes, yes, I agree.
So, Mark, after basic training, then you went off to AIT?
It was in the same place.
In the same place?
It was a continuous training. You know, we went from basic training to AIT. We never left Fort Leonard Wood. You know, we just stayed there and continued.
What's your MOS?
I was 12 Charlie, bridge crew member. It's in the combat engineer.
Oh, okay. All right. So... Fast forward now to when he did do his first deployment. What did he tell you? How did he let you know he was deploying?
Well, he first, if I'm not mistaken, went to Korea first.
Mm. Yeah, that was
and
the first.
So that was a year, if I remember correctly.
So that was hard already.
So that was a little relief that he wasn't going yeah. there yet. But he did go to Korea first mm-hmm. at the...
That was my first... Basically, I'll break down the timeline. Went to Fort Leonard Wood, obviously, mm-hmm. for base training. Mm-hmm. Then my first duty station, which I had picked, was Korea for a year. Mm-hmm. And I went to Korea for a year. I got back stateside. I was stationed at Fort Polk, Louisiana. Mm. And I was there for about a month. And then they had told us we were deploying to Iraq.
Then I got the call after that.
So before we get to the call, so tell us, what did you think of Korea? You'd been living in southern New Mexico, you'd seen beautiful Fort Lost in the Woods, and now you were where?
Yeah, I was in, it was a city called Wijeonbu, uh-huh. South Korea. Mm-hmm. It was a totally different culture. It was a lot of... I had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I would, to this day, I would go back to visit. Mm-hmm. It was just cool. It was different. And that's why I picked it, you know, as nervous as I was going to Korea.
Right.
They gave me a choice of either go to Korea or Fort Hood, Texas.
Oh.
Well, I've been to New Mexico and Texas at that time, so the best thing was to go to Korea, where I had never been. So.
Right. Did you meet any Korean people? Did you interact with Koreans?
Yes, I did. There was actually, they called them Katusas. They were a Korean augmentation to the United States Army,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they were stationed with us.
Ah, okay.
And so I met and socialized with a lot of the, you know, South Korean Army troops.
Okay. So did you get lots of souvenirs and postcards from Korea?
Yes, and he loved the ramen noodles, the real ramen noodles.
I hear they're a lot different.
Chicken and cheese ramen.
He said they're a lot different than here.
You didn't get a chance to go visit, did you?
No.
Oh, that's
no.
too bad.
But he made a lot of friends and had a lot of fun for that year.
Yeah, it was good times. I mean, we were in the field a lot, obviously, you know, once a month. And I didn't like the alerts at like 3 o'clock in the morning, but mm-mm. you know, other than that, it was a lot of fun.
So now he's back from Korea, and you're thinking he's going to get settled in Fort Polk, and
yes.
then you get a phone call.
Yes.
And what did he say?
That he was going to be going to Iraq. Mm.
And how did you feel?
I felt like it wasn't real,
mm-hmm.
kind of like mm-hmm. this isn't happening, but I knew it was eventually going to happen. So I just tried to put a brave face on for his sake. Mm-hmm. And I personally felt very brokenhearted and scared
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and just prayed a lot, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. said, please, Lord, take care of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Mark, since your job is soldier and you train a lot as soldier, were you a little excited? And this is what I've been trained to do. I'm going to war. This is my job. Or were you like, this is not exactly what?
I think it was a mixed bag of emotions. You know, on the one hand, I was, you know, not just me, all of us, you know, were excited, you know, to finally get to, you know, basically what we trained for all this time we're going to be able to do. But on the other hand, you know, I was kind of, you know, I hadn't been back from Korea for but a couple of weeks when they were telling us this. And I knew by the time we left, I would only been stateside for a month and a half. And, you know, I was kind of, I guess I could say I was a little confused about that, but, you know, I just told myself, I mentally prepared myself, you know, to go to war. And I just told myself, I said, you know what, this is what you trained for, though.
Right.
You know.
So this was about 2003?
This was in 2000, and I got out of Korea in December of 2002, and I got to Fort Polk January 2nd of 2003.
So this was early on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to focus more on the family dynamics then. So you had one tour of Iraq?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And so how did you guys communicate? Because I keep hearing about, you know, people Skyping and people instant messaging and now cell phones. But when my husband was deployed, we didn't have any of that. So how did you guys communicate?
Cause through letters.
Through letters.
And he could call me once a month.
Once every great while.
Maybe once every 6 months. I didn't get to talk to him. There was no phones, no Skyping, no computers. It all was letters and maybe a phone call just for a few minutes to see how I was doing. He would call.
So we were talking about care packages and letters. What was your daily routine like? And did you get your kids involved in putting together care packages for their older? So what kind of things did you put in the care packages?
I actually managed a Family Dollar in Ruidoso. And so I had good access to all the junk food and the goodies and the candies and anybody that shops there knows it's a good place to get snacks. And me and the kids would go and we would send him packages. And he begged me for baby wipes because they needed those a lot out there. So I used to send him packages of candies that wouldn't melt, baby wipes, and whatever he needed. You know, if he'd write me and I'd get a bunch of them and send them out there. And of course, he shared them with everybody. They all shared.
So how long did it take a package to get there, do you know, or a letter? What was it like?
It would take like over 2-3 weeks for him to ever get the package.
Yeah, it was about a month. Like I would see the post date on it. It'd take like 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes a month.
Yeah, it was hard to communicate. There was not that much communication.
So did you find yourself glued to the TV every day?
Yes.
Looking,
and I was a CNN junkie, which was a mistake.
Well, it can be very upsetting.
Yeah.
So you had to hold it together, though, for him. So be brave for him and write him nice, cheerful letters.
Yes.
You had to be brave for your kids. Cause And so it must have been very stressful for you because you didn't have an outlet. Were there other military moms around?
No, mine was, I was pretty solitary by myself, and I just kept it in, which was a mistake because it did end up
causing
me conflict and a lot of, you know, pain. That you hold in because you're trying to be strong for so long and you can only be strong for so long before something, you know, gives in. And I just tried to keep it together. For support, I would talk to my grandparents and my grandpa.
Because he'd been there. They'd been
there. Yeah, they've been there and they would put me, help me through it. Say he's going to be fine. You're doing good. You're strong. You're doing fine. He'll be fine, and they prayed a lot for him, and it was prayer. prayer.
I have to tell our listener that Lena and Alfredo were married during World War II, and so Lena stayed behind while Alfredo was off to war. And so that was a good intergenerational support system.
Yes.
So we're going to... You were in many places. You were in Baghdad and Tikrit and Fallujah and... Balad. So you saw most of it.
Yeah.
So how long were you there?
In theater in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I was there from Valentine's Day 2003 to Valentine's Day 2004.
Okay.
And we crossed into the breach of Iraq on March 19th, 2003, the first day of the war.
Okay. Wow. So, and you have other family members that also served in Afghanistan and Iraq, too. You have Larry's family also.
Yes.
Was there. Wow. So, we're going to skip now to coming home, because this is a very important thing that we're going to discuss. So when you came home, obviously you came home a different person than you left here.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. I came... did you want to know like how I felt? Or?
Well, just a little bit. Did you feel that you had done a good job in Iraq?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, we did the job, you know, we got the job done. Of course, for me, it was a, you know, mixed emotions because I, you know, I felt, you know, proud and, you know, it was an honor to serve, you know, alongside my, you know, brothers. Mm-hmm. And over there, you know, we became, you know, like family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, it was, you know, kind of a little, I guess you could say, bitterness, maybe.
And so he came home. So you didn't stay in the military? Did you decide to get out and GI Bill?
I got back and I did my remaining 8 months for Pope Louisiana, and then I ETS'd. I got out in August of 2004.
And so you moved back to New Mexico then?
Yes.
So he came back to New Mexico, and did you see him immediately after he came back from Iraq? Did you get to see him? Did he come home from Fort Polk, or... Did he come home for leave after combat?
Oh, yeah, I did come home for a couple weeks after we got back.
Yeah, we picked him up in the El Paso airport.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Me and my two younger kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we were very excited.
Mm-hmm.
And he could only come home for a couple weeks, and then they were going to take him back to Fort Polk. But me and my kids drove an hour and a half from where we live to the airport, and very excited to see him.
Now, two questions. And the first question is, how long had you been back from Iraq before you came to see your mom?
Probably 2 weeks to a month. You know, enough time for... Because, you know, they have, you know, specific... programs that we have to go through when we get back.
To kind of decompress.
You know,
Yeah.
They have to, you know.
They need programs like that for the parents.
The parents, they do.
So after, you know, so we had to do that, you know, for a couple of weeks, you know, before they would let us loose and, you know, to go home.
To go home.
You know.
And was it strange? Did it just, you came back and I've heard other combat vets say they come back and everything is in a different perspective, and they look at people just totally differently.
Yeah, I came back with a whole appreciation, a whole different aspect on life. You know, it's, you know, because it's you never know,
right.
You know what's going to happen, and you know, I just looked around, and you know, I don't know. I noticed that when I came back from war, I looked at people differently too. Like I looked at civilians, you know, and this isn't true of all civilians, you know, but I looked at like some civilians and I just, you know, thought, you know, they take a lot of things for granted, you know, they don't even know.
So as a mom, you pick up your kid at the airport. Could you tell he was different?
Yes, immediately.
What'd you see?
I just saw a young man that was very strong. And he looked very brave on the outside. But I felt in my heart that he was different. But I didn't know exactly. I couldn't put my finger on it.
You couldn't put your finger on it,
yeah. But I knew from the beginning.
And
that was the beginning of a new journey for us. Because it took many years before he ever went to a VA hospital. And I would try to talk to him, but he didn't believe nothing was different until it took us 8 years before he finally agreed to let me go with him to a hospital to just be checked out.
Well, I know that I feel like I came back, like, hardened. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of like the Army teaches you, you know, to be, you know, to be strong and to be, you know, not to be weak, you know, and I felt like I was, you know, kind of hardened to a lot of things.
But you didn't think you had a problem, or you didn't think that it was causing havoc or anything.
Right.
Yeah, because it's how I was taught to be, you know, to not convey my problems onto other people.
Right.
You know, to internalize and, you know, they call it resilience, you know, like we talked about.
Right.
And that's just the way that I dealt with it. But.
Yeah. They keep pushing the term resilience on the military kids. And, you know, how resilient can a military kid be with parents deploying now? What is it, 12 years have we been doing this now? How resilient are they after multiple tours?
Yes.
So when you finally went to the VA hospital, was there any support for you as a mom? I mean,
no.
And so there still hasn't been a whole lot of help.
No.
So what would you, if you had the opportunity to make suggestions to somebody, I don't know who it would be. What would you want as a parent for support, or what kind of things would you like to see military parents get?
I would think some kind of a support system, but we could all be extended family, maybe helping each other, phone calls, talking to somebody just to say how are you doing today, or if you want to cry with somebody else that's in your position, you can do it together and you don't have to get your younger kids involved, and you know, you have some outlet for your emotional, you know. And then when they come home, I'd like to see people help with, oh, I understand what you're going through with your son, and I'm going through this with my daughter, and this is what I did that helps, and just bounce ideas off each other, maybe help each other.
Because I know that my son was single when he deployed too, and I got on the family readiness group emails, but that was mostly for the wives, I think, the spouses that were there at Fort Riley. He was at Fort Riley. So I felt like you, kind of out of the loop.
Yes, that's what it feels like.
And so it is, I'm wondering if there is a program out there. I don't know. But that sounds like a good idea. It would have made life easier for you just to...
Yes, because I always look at my grandmother as the spouse of this World War II veteran. But I didn't feel like I fit into that group because he's not my husband. But there's nothing for a mother for her child, you know, and how to, a single mom on top of that, that's raising kids on her own,
right,
and then trying to be, you know, just trying to
Trying to hold it together.
Yes.
Yeah, because you can't fall apart because you have other kids that depend on you.
And they really help a spouse a lot,
right.
But I think they forget that they're single
parents
there's single kids out there serving that don't have spouses yet. They're too young, and they depend on their mother or father for the support too. You know, so we're trying to be strong for them too, and then they're trying to be strong for us. Mark tried to be real strong for me, and
and that can have its own problems.
Yes.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I think you bring up some excellent points, and I want to thank you for sharing your story
with us.
And so I'm going to wrap it up. Just asking, Mark, what would you like to see for support for either for yourself or for your or for other parents out there, or for for soldiers or for other parents out there? Is there anything that you would like to see change?
Well, for me as a you know, as an ex-troop, I'd like to see, like, once a individual gets out of the military, maybe they can fill out information sheet, mm-hmm. you know, to mm-hmm. give to the, you know, right away to give to the VA. Mm-hmm. That way they can touch bases with them a lot sooner,
uh-huh.
you know, and they won't have to wait, you know, years and have a problem mm-hmm. and not know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can
mm-hmm.
touch bases Reach with out. Them immediately.
I think they've got that in place now.
Do they?
Yeah.
Well, they have the OEF, OIF program, but they probably didn't at the very beginning.
They did.
Right now they are reaching out to all the young troops.
Okay, so that's good. And then for the family of those troops, you know, just they need to, I figure they probably need to do some improvement on that even to this day.
Yeah.
Maybe some kind of net, you know, like this, a similar thing like I said about me, you know, mm. some kind of networking.
Right.
You know, where they.
Because I think you do fall out of the loop.
Yes.
Because there is the spouse groups.
It's
yeah, well, there's a spouse group and there's probably something, but you're not in that loop, so you probably are. I do know that there are some Blue Star Mothers. It's an organization up here. I have no idea what is down in Alamogordo, but there is a group called Blue Star Mothers, and they have kids that are serving or were serving, and they meet and they make care package, but they meet and they are a bond. But how would you know that if it, you know? So this has been a very interesting conversation. I thank you for sharing your story. Once again, this is Circe Olson-Westner, the Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. And so I wanted to thank you guys very much.
Thank you.